The Lindsay Clancy murder trial is currently underway just next door to us in Massachusetts, where the prosecution has just rested its case this week and the defense has started presenting its arguments. The case centers around tragic events that took place in January of 2023, when 36-year-old Lindsay Clancy took the lives of her three young children, ages 5, 3, and 8 months old. Joining us now to give us some legal perspective on the case and key takeaways, Marisa Belair, senior partner at LTKE Law Firm, as well as Stephen Arante, managing partner at LTKE Law Firm.
I do think the key takeaways, I mean, one of the paramount concerns is that this does focus us all in on, you know, women's health and, you know, how a pregnant woman can struggle after giving birth and the resources that are available. I mean, if you think about the fact that Lindsay was an educated nurse, her mother-in-law was a nurse, you know, she sought out professionals based on recommendation. It wasn't like she just looked them up in, you know, the phone book. And I think this trial is highlighting the fact that even with those resources, the system seems to have failed her.
So what is that? I mean, so, and again, you're talking about obviously three children, and I won't go into all the details of the case, but ultimately the three children were killed. Lindsay Clancy also attempting to take her own life after that happened. From a legal standpoint, I mean, what is the worst, I guess, that could happen to Lindsay Clancy, knowing that, as you just said so effectively, Marisa, I mean, they're clearly focusing on her health as being one of the biggest reasons why this took place.
Yeah. So the defense is really that, you know, she is essentially not guilty by reason of this medical psychosis. So she's essentially insane at the time she committed these acts, not able to appreciate that, you know, she had committed those. So she would be considered not guilty if they prove their case. I mean, even if the prosecution fails in, you know, proving to the jury that that wasn't true, the burden of the defense would be also just to convince the jury that she was just outright, you know, not guilty, that maybe these crimes occurred through some other fashion. So, I mean, that's essentially what's unfolding before our eyes. As you started out this segment, mom and sister are testifying and they're highlighting the text messages and the pleas for help. You know, I think one of the things that was focused on yesterday was Lindsay was asking her mom to come up from Wallingford to stay with her because she was afraid to be alone with the children. So they're going to be delving deep into that, I think, in the day, you know, ahead.
I'm curious, and again, obviously, so Stephen also is here, who is the managing partner for LTKE Law Firm. Have you guys seen cases, maybe not to this extreme, but certainly where it comes back to women's health as being one of the sticking points for why, you know, tragedy occurs?
Women's health is an issue, but I think in this case, there's another issue at play here. The not guilty by reason of insanity is always difficult, and the part that I think lawyers who try those cases will tell you is very often the defendant is a very dangerous person, and the jury perceives that if they find the person not guilty by reason of insanity, and you know, here if you're killing your children, obviously you had to be insane at that point. But the concern in most cases is if we find the person not guilty, they'll go to a psychiatric institution for, you know, 5 years or 10 years or whatever, and they'll get out and jurors feel more comfortable convicting the person. That way they'll stay in jail for the rest of their lives and, you know, will be safe. They won't be back on the streets. That's not in play in this case. In this case, she's not a danger to anyone else. She's confined to a wheelchair. If she's found not guilty by reason of insanity, which I think she probably will be because, you know, she had to be at that moment, you know, having a psychosis, having a reaction to medication or to postpartum psychosis, whichever it is. She's not a danger to anybody. And I think the jury would be more comfortable allowing her to be found not guilty. In Massachusetts, not guilty by reason of insanity has not worked very well for most defendants, but most defendants have been, you know, people who you'd be afraid to ever let back out on the street. So I think she has a real shot to convince the jury in this case.
That's kind of wild, though. And maybe that's from a not legal standpoint, clearly, because I am not a lawyer. I mean, you guys obviously have much better background and understanding of that. So what you just said, Steve, makes sense. I'm not discrediting that. That makes total sense. Like, how, who else could she really hurt in the condition she's in and all of that? And when you look at, you know, why this could have happened and what's been outlined during this trial, sure. But at the end of the day, it's so hard to allow somebody to keep living when three children are gone. Right. I mean, that's so, and that's just a comment, I feel like, just a, I don't know, a reaction to this case.
Yeah, I think the prosecution's burden is going to be to say to the jurors, look, you know, she knew what she was doing. Follow the facts, follow the law. You know, we've met our burden. She's admitted that she killed the children, and you shouldn't let her out off because of that. The flip side is, you know, how could she not be out of her mind to kill her children? And that defense is going to argue that she either was out of her mind because of the postpartum psychosis or because of the drugs or the combination of drugs, or as her medical malpractice case talks about, these doctors were not coordinating her care, and therefore the medicine she was on was exacerbating the symptoms of her psychosis. And so it's really not her fault. She wasn't premeditated in killing these children. You know, she was hearing voices, et cetera, hallucinating. And that's what caused her this act. But she did not meet the definition of the Massachusetts law that says she has to have a mental disease or defect and lacks the substantial capacity to appreciate the criminality of her act. And that's what the defense is going to try to show, is that she really didn't understand what she was doing. And you can see a jury, and it depends on the jurors. And unless you listen to all the evidence, you know, every day, I think different jurors could come out different ways. But I think this is a case where she has a better shot than most on this not guilty by reason of insanity, because she's not a danger. Because I think it's easy to say she was not in her right mind when she did these acts. And, you know, there's nothing's bringing back these children. And whether you put her behind bars or you put her in an institution, you know, what's the difference to the public? You know, it's a sad case, and there's no winners no matter what happens. But, you know, those are both reasonable alternatives. I'm just saying that I think you have a reasonable shot at convincing this jury that in this case, she should not be found guilty by reason of insanity.
How likely is it from your, again, I want to make something super clear that both Steve and Marisa from LTKE Law Firm, they have nothing to do with this case. We're just going to get kind of legal perspective, because I think they both have a wealth of knowledge and can really weigh in and help us to understand kind of from a like a bird's eye view what's going on with the Lindsay Clancy case. How likely is it that doctors or even family members could down the line be implicated as problems or people who didn't help avoid this inevitably becoming an issue? You know, the doctors I know testified at one point that they never saw her show signs or hear her say anything about feeling suicidal. But, you know, that's not what has been said on the stand. Or, you know, the mother, you know, bringing her up again. I know, Marisa, you were just saying that when we were watching the trial, the mother would come up from Connecticut a lot and go to stay with the family in Massachusetts. And she witnessed and would hear from the kids that they were nervous because the mother was, you know, saying she'd harm herself or she, you know, made the kids uncomfortable. Like, who gets implicated in this case, or do they not, because they weren't the ones who actually went through with the crime?
Well, so I think you're asking two separate questions. So I think the first question that I can respond to is from a medical malpractice standpoint, you know, it is very likely that these medical professionals could be implicated. So, you know, I'm not a lawyer in Massachusetts, I will give you that caveat, but in Connecticut had a similar situation unfolded here. It would be our burden as lawyers to prove that, you know, these doctors, you know, breached a duty. So in layman's terms, that really means, did they do something they shouldn't have done, or failed to do something that they should have done, which I think is where this case centers more. What we have is, or from what I've seen, is there was not a lot of communication going on between providers. You highlighted that, Melissa. And then also, you know, should they have done more to interview family members to validate the complaints and feelings that Lindsay was experiencing? And if a lawyer is able to prove that those doctors breached those elements, then there is a very good chance that they could be held civilly responsible. And I should say that civil liability, that only it can provide money damages to a person. It wouldn't, give them jail time or any type of penalty like that. The second question I think you're asking is, you know, were there other family members that were culpable here in the children's deaths? And I think a lot of things have come out of the news about, you know, the husband's involvement and responsibility. And this is where I go back to what Steve just said. You know, you have to really watch the evidence every day and listen to what's coming out day by day, because there's a lot of people, you know, on TikTok and other pieces of social media highlighting the things that they don't think the husband did and that he's as much responsible as she is. Now, look, I'm not sure what all of the evidence shows, but what I have seen is that he worked at home. So he did not see any kinds of threats. At least that's what he testified to, that she posed to the children. He never saw her intend to harm them or talk about harming them. He claimed that that was news to him. So I don't know that there will be any criminal charges asked to him. But that's something that, I think the jury will consider when they're actually weighing the responsibility of Lindsay. You know, was she experiencing the psychosis or did she know what she was doing? Because we have seen evidence, at least from the prosecution, that before she sent her husband Patrick out to get takeout in CVS, she looked up on her phone on maps the distance it would take him and the time it would take him to make both of those stops and come back home. And the prosecution's argument in that regard is that she was of sound mind and contemplating how long she had to complete this heinous act, if in fact that's what she was thinking about.
You bring up something else, Marisa and Stephen, or Marisa, whoever would like to answer this. How complicated have cases become in today's world when you also weigh in the fact that social media does play a role in it, let alone even YouTube? I mean, a lot of times you can go back and literally rewatch. Like, I look at back here in Connecticut, totally separate, but you look at the Jimmy McGrath case and what's gone on with Raul Valley. That entire trial is just sitting on YouTube. And even though they might go into a second trial, it seems like it's going that way. You could basically go back and rewatch everything. So it makes it a heck of a lot, I would think, harder to find a jury that's not biased, or to find a judge who's not going to hear the noise outside or on social media, TikTok, what have you. Have you seen a shift in how challenging cases of this magnitude can be because of the emergence of YouTube and social media and just so many voices now weighing in on cases, or not really? People are still doing their jobs effectively.
Well, this jury is not sequestered, and they are told every day, multiple times per day, not to look at social media, not to look at television, not to discuss this with their loved ones. Whether they follow those instructions, my guess is probably not for the most part. And there have been a couple of cases where verdicts have been overturned because it came out that a juror either went to the scene or viewed the scene on a social platform or started looking at stuff. So it has become a big concern from, you know, both the court system perspective and the lawyer's perspective. Nobody wants to have to retry this case because some juror decides that they're going to do a little investigating on their own. They're allowed to have testimony once the case is over and they're deliberating. They can have testimony read back so that they can re-review it. But it does concern lawyers. I don't know that there's much we can do about it. We hope that the jurors don't get persuaded by outside forces, because they're told over and over again they're to decide the case on what they hear in the courtroom and only what they hear in the courtroom, because that's what the lawyers are going to base any appeals that are taken on, is what happened in the courtroom, not what happened outside. There are many conversations between the lawyers and the judge about, you know, various rulings that the jurors are not part of. And the lawyers, you know, work very hard to make sure that the jurors only hear what they're supposed to hear. And there's definitely a little bit of maneuvering by lawyers, and everybody's seen this on TV or in the movies, where they ask questions that they know are improper because they want the jury to hear things. So there's a lot of gamesmanship that does go on. But nobody, no lawyer on either side wants the jury to be influenced by, you know, outside people who are just making comments based on, you know, bits and pieces of the case that they've heard about. So it makes the job much more difficult.
Well, I want to thank you both again for just giving legal perspective, both Marisa Belair and Stephen Arante, who, again, have nothing to do with the Clancy case, but giving us legal perspective today on the show. Thank you both so much for what you do, LTKE Law Firm. And again, if you want more information to connect with their team, be sure to check out LTKE.com. We're going to be right back. You're listening to Melissa in the Morning.